Some of the views expressed on the Mormon Channel are solely for the education and inspiration of our audience and may not represent the official position of the Church.
Hi, and welcome to Tech Savvy on the Mormon Channel, a production of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm your host, Elisa Sharton, and today we're going to be talking about writing with new technology, and I'm thrilled to be able to welcome Brandon Mull, the author of Fable Haven, and it sold 2 million copies in the United States. He also went to BYU and got a degree in public relations and was in the Divine Comedy Troupe. Is that correct?
That's right.
And he was the head writer for the Divine Comedy Troupe. We also want to welcome Danae Handy, who is also a writer and a blogger. And her blog is called My Real Life Was Backordered, which I really like the name of that blog. She also wrote a book about her experiences living in Puerto Rico called The Accidental Gringo. Mm-hmm.
It's a collection of essays, humorous essays, about what it's like to be an American living in a place like Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Awesome. Welcome to the show today. Let's talk about words. Words have such power, and they can evoke emotion. You know, you can have a word, read words, and it brings anger. Words can bring in sadness. Mothers use words to soothe their babies. What is it with words, and how can you string them together to be so powerful? Let's talk to you, Brandon.
The kind of writing I do is mostly fiction, and so what I'm trying to use words to do is to bring characters and relationships to life. Mm-hmm. Probably the key to that, what anchors that, is finding good details, evocative details that make a relationship seem honest or real, whether you create a funny moment or a sad moment. It usually comes out of understanding who that person is, understanding their relationship to the other person in the scene in such a way that it starts to feel real because you've created this illusion, sort of.
Well, it's true, because in your first book, Fable Haven, there's naughty little Seth, and he gets sent to the room, and I remember at one point slamming the book shut and saying, "Oh, you naughty little boy, why don't you just be obedient?" And you had strung the perfect words together to make me feel this emotion of, "You're being disobedient. Why can't you be more obedient? Why can't you just do what you're told?" And it was brilliant. It was fantastic. And I'm sure it took a lot of editing and crafting.
Yeah, I mean, you're very gradually kind of weaving a spell. You're gradually bringing, with the character, you bring them to life through everything that you give the reader, through everything the character says, through everything the character chooses, through everything, every physical description you give of the character. All those things kind of add up to cumulatively bring a character to life.
Well, and Danae, you're really great with your words, too, because I read your blog and I can hear you telling the story. So what process do you go through finding the actual words to put those stories to life?
Well, I think in my situation, what you're talking about really is voice, you know, and how are you able to convey the person behind the writing. Where Brandon is writing fiction, I'm writing narrative nonfiction, and so it tends to be more, here's my experience, here it's coming from my, you know, my point of view. And as much of that as I can do and have it sound like me, then yes, I'm going to do that. When I'm editing for others, especially editing those who are also essayists and writing narrative nonfiction, I have to be really careful not to infuse my voice into their work as I try to help them reshape it, you know, what it is they're trying to say. We say things like, you know, and things like that, and you don't want to necessarily put that into your writing, but you do want to keep, you know, you want to keep the voice consistent. And I know that eventually we're going to want to talk a little bit about integrity. You have to maintain not just personal integrity, but integrity of your voice. Brandon's books have a very carefully crafted voice from his main character. At least I've always perceived his main character as being Kendra, as being the daughter. And you see this, the voice continues through there, through her perspective. It's really very carefully done, very well done. And you want the same thing in narrative nonfiction as well, whether you're blogging or writing essays. Accidental Gringo was a lighthearted look at life through the eyes of someone who thinks they're in America and they really aren't. And, you know, and so you want to have that kind of, that voice needs to be, you know, needs to be consistent.
What kind of writing do you personally like to read that inspires you and maybe gets the creative juices going?
For me, well, in general, voice is a key issue, whatever you're writing, because voice is kind of that fingerprint of the author. That's how the way I tell a story is my voice, kind of, right?
Like, right.
And the way someone else would tell a story is their voice. And so part of what I'm looking for when I'm looking for good fiction is is people who tell stories in interesting ways, and hopefully in ways that are kind of different from how I tell a story, so that I can learn from their strengths, learn from the things that they do well. You could probably guess, since Fablehaven's fantasy, I'm a sucker for fantasy adventure or big adventures, whether that's old stuff like Count of Monte Cristo or whether it's more recent stuff. There's a book called The Emerald Atlas that I thought was really fun, just cool family-friendly fantasy kind of stuff.
For me, I like to, depending on what kind of writing I'm doing, I'll often read something that I think is going to get that voice in my head. For example, someone asked me recently if I had read The Help. I'm looking forward to reading The Help, but I can't read it right now because it's a different voice than what I'm working on in my novel, which is a humorous novel. If I'm working on essays, I'll choose essayists that I really love to read. Some of the best writing I've ever done has been after I've read certain essays. As a singer, I've found that there are certain people with whom you blend better. And if you want to sing a certain way, you'll sing with someone who kind of sings like you, creates a harmony like yours. And as a writer, for myself, especially because I am talking about a lot of narrative, I'll read narrative that puts that voice in your head. We hate to admit that we tend to be mimics, but to a certain degree, we are.
Well, and we're inspired. We read people's things, and then it inspires an idea that we then take and build upon.
And it can be very exciting. That's one of the really great things about blogging, for example, is you can read so many different voices and get so many ideas, and all of a sudden you're ready to go back to your own writing and put the same thing into your words and through your experiences.
For sure. Has technology influenced, hindered, helped you with your writing, either one of you?
Oh, absolutely. For me, Brandon.
For me, I guess I use technology to connect with fans probably more than with my writing specifically. I mean, I'm glad I have a computer to write on and not a typewriter. Anything that technology does for me as an author is it creates opportunities for me to connect with fans. Like I use Twitter and Facebook a lot or mediums like that that let me send out quick messages to fans or let me get feedback from fans, people who are enjoying the books.
So you use Twitter and Facebook. Let's talk about that because there's really a lot of boundaries within Twitter. You have 140 characters. So how do you carefully choose the words that you're going to use to get your message across in 140 characters or in your blog, 500 words, or on Facebook, you know, so that it's not this long novel of a post? You have to carefully craft those. How do you do that?
A cool thing about Twitter is it forces you to keep it so tight. And that's almost like a rule. Like when I used to write sketch comedy, when you write comedy skits, if you don't keep it really tight, you lose your audience. And so to some degree, Twitter forces you to not be boring.
Yeah,
you know what
shorter,
I mean?
Sharper, stronger.
You to
yeah.
Make it really, really dense. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes that's just saying something funny that my kid said and just passing that along. So sometimes the goal of Twitter is just to pass along an amusing anecdote. Like one might be my son. One day, he was five, and he came up to me and he's like, "If you die, and it's your birthday, you're still dead." Which is just weird and funny and perfect little bite-sized kind of thing that you could throw on Twitter.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely 140 characters.
Pass that along with just a few characters.
Yeah.
Or sometimes it's just practical info, like I've got a book signing at a certain place, and you just pass on this practical info in a brief way.
Absolutely. That's fabulous. I like that. I'm going to have to go find that and retweet that.
Yeah, very, very quirky, but very funny, yeah.
That's funny.
Well, and it sounds to me like we both have a humor background. Mm-hmm. I am a humor writer, and brevity really is the soul of wit. When I started writing, I started blogging. I wrote my first book, and then I discovered blogging. And blogging requires that you write. I remember the first thing I wrote for Mormon Mommy Blogs and got a response from the editor there that said, essentially, this is three times too long for a blog post.
I said it nicer than that.
You were very kind, and yet it was, you were right, it's over 2,000 words. Mm-hmm. You don't put 2,000 words on a blog. Mm-hmm. And so it's been good for me to use these media as a way to really tighten up my writing and to only put, you know, you wonder sometimes what Nephi did? You know, how did he, I mean, at least we're not having to chisel it onto gold plates, you know. And yet I think if I did, I would really understand brevity and the tightness of communication.
And choosing your words.
Very carefully.
Yeah. You'd think long and hard. You would think
you
long and hard before you wrote
would.
It down.
Chiseled that word out and then go, oh, that wasn't the right word. Well, now it stands.
Well, and that actually takes us back to the question of how do you choose your words at all? I'm a real believer that we are stewards over every word that passes our lips, that comes through our computer that comes into our books, that goes into everything that we say. And I love, you know, when you read the Book of Mormon, when you get that message over and over again that says, I'm only giving you 1/100th part of the things that mm-hmm. are in my heart. And if you want to read about the wars, go to the other plates. This is all about the things that are going to save you. When in using social media and in using the internet and using our computers, I'm a public speaker. I'm kind of out working with audiences. I have to be careful of everything that I say, not because I'm censoring myself, but because I own what goes into someone's ears and what goes into someone's eyes and what goes into their heart and into their mind. I have some stewardship, you know, over that. And you learn, I think, especially when looking for brevity, which, and this is what we're talking about with the conciseness of certain forms of social media, you learn how to choose your words carefully. And you also learn that a little goes a long way, especially in humor or in things of the heart. You know, I know that, that there's an interest in how do we talk, you know, how do we share the gospel through social media?
Yeah.
And I would have to say that you live it first. And then after that, you say almost as little as possible in terms of being a proselytizer. And instead, you just say what's in your heart, share, you know, how you feel.
I like that. Let's talk about this. Let's expound upon this idea of sharing the gospel, because we've all had the opportunity to see people that do it on the internet. And some are very, very good at it, and some are not. And we don't want to come across as being super pompous or overbearing mm-hmm. or condescending either, but we also don't want to sound ridiculous or scary. And so we right. have to choose our words carefully. How do we do that so that we avoid those traps?
Well, one of the things that we're discovering, I think, is that the audience is changing. And in fact, social media is changing. You know, when we saw the article, remind me the name of the website that we read the article from about mommy bloggers mm-hmm. and how there is this contingent out there that is reading LDS women's blogs who are not LDS, and they're very interested in what's going on in our lives and what we're doing and what we are, you know, what we're blogging about.
Right.
I know that this phrase has come up before. You and I have had a good laugh at it from time to time, but there's real truth to the idea of an organic outgrowth, where what you say really has to be an outgrowth of how you really feel.
Yes.
And it also has to, I love this from Moroni. I love when he says, you know, you need to ask if these things are not true. If you approach what you're saying from a place of faith and belief, and then just be yourself, then you're close. You're close. You still, I think, have to be careful. What we also don't want to appear to be is afraid. You know, we don't want to be ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. You know, we don't want to come off that way either. We want to be, you know, an example of the
believers. And it's kind of a line, too, because I think that people read our blogs. We don't know who's on the other end. We had a conversation, Brandon, where we were talking about that, how in order to really proclaim the gospel, we have to have had really built a relationship with those people. So, and we talked about how people are reading our blogs and they know more about us than maybe, or our books, and know more about us than we know about them at all. So it's a kind of a fine line that we walk.
I think something that helps there is if you, if you're going to try to tell someone else what they need to be doing, there needs to be some sort of relationship there. Mm-hmm. And in a blog, there's not a situation where mm-hmm. that relationship can be there. You know,
right.
you're speaking to this wide variety of people. And so if you focused on how the gospel affected you and your life and what you like about it and how it strengthens you, like, then you kind of just become an example of somebody trying to live it.
Right. And, like the PR thing, show me, don't tell me.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think with that, it's hard to get offended if someone's saying, I like this because of this, and I like this because, you know, you're not saying you're doing something wrong or your religion's dumb, but you're just talking about what you like, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
And I think if you're going to create curiosity in someone else, that's a good way to do it, is just to show that you're that you love it, that you live it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and how do we avoid coming across as being overzealous, do you think?
I think part of that is the idea of not being like, you need to do this, you need to do that, when there's no relationship there. I really think that's a big part of it. If you start kind of preaching at somebody who you don't have a relationship with, that could probably be kind of hard to swallow a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously you don't want to look holier than thou either. You don't have to try to hold yourself up as this perfect example, this perfect guy. I think anyone would get cynical about that. Mm-hmm. For me, with my job, because I'm writing books that go into schools, I'm writing books that aren't just for, you know, LDS people. I'm writing books that get read around the country. And so I avoid the topic of my religion specifically, because there's huge issues with that. If I got into, like, you know, trying to push LDS, being LDS in my books, there would be issues with that with public schools,
right,
having my books.
Right.
But at the same time, I can still hopefully be an example of a good moral person who's trying to do what's right. And there's moral choices in the books. And so there's still chances for me to testify of things I think are good or worthwhile, and things about right and wrong and good and evil and light and dark, mm-hmm, without getting into the details of my personal beliefs, which I might do, I would be more open to doing if someone was interested and came to me with questions. You know, mm-hmm, what I mean?
You know, in Fablehaven, in the first of his books, in fact, I remember there were a couple of places where I thought, you know, if you're LDS, you're getting the code here. You know, you can hear the belief system that, mm-hmm, it's just coming through. If you're not, you're getting some really solid counsel. In fact, I remember a line from one of your books, from the first book, that says, evil likes the dark. And that's a very universally understood principle. It is also absolutely true. And the second part being, there's another element to that story where evil keeps you in the dark as long as possible and then will bring you out and expose you and ruin you. And, you know, all told in the story of, you know, in a young adult fantasy story. Right. And yet it is an eternal principle. It is an eternal truth and something that he is able to weave through his story in such a way that people can learn it and accept it without necessarily having the Mormon, you know, faith, you know. And it doesn't take long. Say, who is this guy? I'm going to Google him. Well, what do you know? He's, mm-hmm, you know, he's a member. He's an LDS. And they start looking. The best ones to meet are the ones who come looking for you.
Yeah, no, yeah, of course. Well, and for me, with fantasy, it's fun because fantasy lets you look at real life issues from sort of a safe distance. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like I've got this series called Beyonders, which is like my new one. And the series itself deals a lot with heroism and kind of like, how do you try to be a hero in a world that's grown cynical about heroes? Oh. Which is a principle that you could totally apply to our world. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of our traditional heroes, whether it's sports figures or politicians, you know, we've gotten cynical about that. But without pointing fingers of certain people, from the safe distance of a fantasy world, you can look at the principles involved without, like, you know, throwing somebody under the bus. You know?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Have you ever gotten negative comments or negative feedback or emails about just things in general? How do you handle they call them the haters or the trolls? How do you handle that?
I mean, whenever you put anything out there for public scrutiny, there's going to be some people who just don't connect to it. I've been grateful and relieved that I get good feedback. You know, I try to be mindful. Part of that's being mindful of who your audience is and making an audience appropriate. So there's not a lot of stuff where if a 12-year-old reads it, it's going to blow their minds or have bad stuff that parents would object to.
What about, like, with religion, though? Like, if you were to be tweeting or Facebooking about your feelings towards the church and people are responding negatively, how would you choose what words you would use to respond? Or would you respond?
I mean, if someone negatively talked to me about church stuff, I think it's good to respond, but it's not good to argue. You know what, mm-hmm, I mean? Like, because there's some people that are, in fact, some, that's an understatement, on the internet, they're looking for an argument. There's a lot of people out there who just, yeah, they're just sitting back anonymously trying to have arguments because it helps them pass the time or something, or it lets them scratch some itch that, mm-hmm, I don't really have. And so I think it's good to be succinct and not inflammatory and just, and not turn it onto them, or like never get into name calling and stuff like, mm-hmm, that. You know, just keep it about what you like, what you are, and if they don't like it, you know, say, I'm sorry you don't like it. But that, you don't have to go much beyond
and
that.
And agree to disagree.
Well, we in the blogging world, in the internet world, there's the phrase, you don't feed the trolls. Mm-hmm. You never feed the trolls. And that's what you're saying. You know, that some things don't deserve a response. For one thing, not because we're not willing to stand right up and defend our beliefs and defend who we are, but because that's not what is being looked for. They're not looking for answers. They're looking for arguments. And most of us really aren't really, for one thing, we aren't argumentative by nature. We're not an argumentative people. And so if what you're really looking for is a debate or an argument, you're not going to find a lot of Mormons who are really up for that. Mm-hmm. If you really want answers, we know our faith. and we know our doctrines. And if you're, even if your questions are antagonistic or come across, and of course the internet is so, the downside is it's all the written word and you can never get inflection. You don't ever quite get tone or attitude.
Yeah.
And sometimes things can feel a little belligerent. And yet if you can look beyond that and say, are you really asking, you know, this, is this really what you want to know? And you can get a feel for where someone really is coming from. Then at that point, yeah, you bet. I've got answers for you. I can send you in the direction, you know, that you need. If all you're doing is trolling for a fight, you're just going to have to find it somewhere else. I don't have the time, energy, or interest in fighting with you.
Well, and I like this because Elder Perry said this. He said, the church attracts attention on the internet, which, as you know, has dramatically changed the way people share information. At all times of the day, across the entire world, the church and its teachings are being discussed on the internet, on blogs and social networks by people who have never written for a newspaper or a magazine. They're making videos and sharing them online. These are ordinary people, both members of our faith and other faiths, who are talking about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And if you've visited Mormon.org lately, which is the church website for those interested in learning about the church, you have seen members who have uploaded information about themselves. They're creating online profiles that explain who they are and why their religious beliefs are important to them, and they're speaking up about their faith. And this is what I love. We should appreciate and approach such conversations with Christ-like love. Our tone, whether speaking or in writing, should be respectful and civil, regardless of the response of others. We should be honest and open and try to be clear in what we say. We want to avoid arguing or becoming defensive in any way. And that's pretty clear how we should respond. But it's hard because you see people making negative comments and you're like, but that's not true. That's not true.
You know, there is a collection that I'm co-authoring right now called Tell Me Who I Am. Mm-hmm. And it'll be released sometime in March. It's a collection of essays written by a number of LDS writers. Where basically it's just stories. There is no proselytizing. There's no preaching. We will have a glossary at the end of the book, because of course the collection is filled with Mormonese. You know, we're talking about wards and but essentially it addresses, first of all, the question that came up a few months ago. And this collection came in response to that. And along those lines, in response to President Hinckley's statement at the rededication of the Mesa Temple, where he had a number of ecclesiastical leaders from the area in the chapel of the Mesa Temple. And one of them said, we noticed that you don't have crosses or any other symbols of Jesus on your buildings. And President Hinckley said, we mean no disrespect to our fellow Christians for the icons that they display on their buildings. For us, however, we believe that our people are the symbols of our faith. And if we can always keep that in mind, I could tell you I was a snake charmer. And until you saw me, you know, charm a snake, it doesn't matter what I tell you I am. I really do have to show you what I am. A Christian is as a Christian does. A Latter-day Saint is as a Latter-day Saint does. And in our world, a Latter-day Saint is as a Latter-day Saint writes. Mm. And so we have to be very careful stewards of everything that we write. It doesn't have to be proselytizing. We don't have to be LDS writers in order to be LDS individuals with integrity who write.
I think that
there's a whole world out there that is looking for that kind of writing,
yes,
that kind of message, that kind of entertainment. It doesn't all have to be very deep. I'm certainly proof of that. It can be very lighthearted. There's a lot of joy that can come from just reading and receiving messages that aren't questionable, that aren't challenging, that you can recommend to your children, that you could recommend to your friends.
So how do we then make our writing be real,
mm-hmm,
and authentic and sharing the gospel without being preachy? What would you suggest, you know, if you could give three key suggestions, Brandon, what would those be?
I like what you were saying about humor, because in general, I think almost any writing can benefit from humor. I think that can create relatability. And so I think it's very healthy not to take yourself too seriously. Mm-hmm. And I think that not taking yourself too seriously can help forestall arguments and stuff too. If you keep things a little lighter I would say maybe one thing would be to kind of keep it light, you know, mm-hmm, if you're going to try to be sharing about yourself or about your beliefs on the internet. Another thing might be to get it right. You know what I mean? Like make sure you kind of know the doctrine you're talking about. Like I think that'd be a pretty big deal, because you don't want to feed misinformation out there.
Right.
And then I guess it'd be kind of keep it appropriate. Like at least that's something I have to think about, because I have a certain position with my job and with my role as an author where I've got lots of people coming to me. So if I seemed really preachy or something on my Twitter or on my Facebook, it would rub a lot of people the wrong way. You know, like I've got plenty of non-LDS, you know, readers and fans. And so, so for me, because of who I am, I talk about it. And if that kind of stuff comes up, it comes up quietly. You know what I mean? It doesn't come up overtly. It doesn't come up in a preachy way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. In general, as we're thinking about writing, I mean, good writing is having a voice. That's the heart of good writing, and having a voice as a writer comes from reading a lot and writing a lot. The more you write, the more you'll find what you sound like as you're telling a narrative, or as you're telling a story, or as you're telling about your life. And the more you can put your personality into your words, kind of find out, oh, here's what I look like on paper, here's what I sound like when I'm telling a story. The more you can find that, the more your writing will really start to feel professional and interesting.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
And reflect who you really are. I would say the first thing is, if you want to write authentically, you better be living authentically, which is not the same thing as living perfectly.
Yeah.
But living authentically, you know, I love the fact that there are 14 million members of the church all over the world. I've lived in very small branches abroad, overseas, where church programs, for example, are implemented differently according to the needs of the members in those areas. The programs themselves are consistent. The implementation is different. And in individuals, we can live the gospel in the way that the Spirit directs us to live the gospel. And that qualifies then as authentic
living.
Yeah. And if you're living authentically, it's going to come through in that voice. It's going to come through in the things that you write. It will help in the choices that you make. There will be a whole lot of things that are never going to make it to your books. They will never make it to your website. They'll never make it to the pulpit. They really probably shouldn't even make it to the four walls of your home, which should really in a lot of ways be the most sacred place, and where we tend to guard our tongues the least is in our homes.
Mm-hmm.
But living authentically, I think, is the first step to writing authentically.
Well, and that touches on honesty. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because in general, with writing, honesty is one of the big principles. You can almost sense it. You can feel it when a writer's being dishonest.
Yeah.
Or if they create a character that just doesn't feel real.
Absolutely.
And that idea of living authentically will lead to honest writing.
Absolutely.
Where, you know, if your writing's truthful, it's going to resonate a lot more than if you're faking it.
And you don't even have to write necessarily proclaiming the gospel throughout your entire writing, but just relating an experience that you had that would unite lots of people together. Mm-hmm.
I don't mean like I don't mean like preaching truth when I say the word truth or when I say honest. I just mean like that you're being who you truly are.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That you're, which is the same as your authenticity.
And you can share that concisely on Facebook when you're you know talking about, I had a horrible day and I took the opportunity to you know say a prayer and I felt, you know, the weight lifted. You can choose your words correctly so it doesn't come across preachy, but yet you're still showing who you, how you believe and how you do that. You can do it on Facebook and Twitter and your blogs or...
Well, and for that matter, you can even just... I'm not suggesting that you do this. You know, Facebook has become the place where we tend to, you know, put everything, including a whole lot of information that nobody really needs to know about you.
Right.
But if you really are struggling and you post up there, I have really had a rotten day, and that's the end of it, you know, then it becomes a matter of context. How much else are you putting out there that is much more positive, that's much, you know, because I also think that as Latter-day Saints, it's important that we show the world that we're real people.
Yes.
And we have rotten days, and there are times when we have unchristlike thoughts and feelings. And
here's how we resolve them.
Exactly. We want to take them to the end of the road. You certainly don't want to put more out there. There's no reason to be naming names, to be giving details. It's just that, talk about inappropriateness, and I think this is something that may have even come up in one of your other shows. You need to be really very careful about whose story you're telling. And about the time that you start saying, I had a bad day, and here's why she did this and he did that, and all of a sudden else's story is coming out.
Turn it into gossip.
You know,
right?
Yeah.
Then you don't, it's not, just because it affected you doesn't mean that you have a right to it.
Right.
And vloggers really struggle with that, telling more of the story than really they're entitled to tell. My son is dating a girl whose father was an alcoholic, and all of a sudden she's telling this girl's story that is, you know.
Not her,
and so if you're putting out there in social media, your whole self. But it is, again, I mean, do you love the Psalm of Nephi where he just, it just is that rise and fall. Why did my tears wet my pillow? Why, you know, I'm this wretched man. No, I glory in the Lord. I mean, it's just this up and down and up and down. If someone like Nephi can say, dang, I am having a bad day, you know, and yet I know better and I'm going to resolve it. I'm going to go out there and face things again. You've got Elijah who goes up to a cave basically to just die, you know, and an angel comes and says, the first thing you need to do is eat. Mm-hmm. And after that, we're gonna sort things out, you know, and you're going to be okay. And if you can see the end of that story, first of all, we become a lot more real to people. The world wonders if we are for real with good cause, because we often tend to hide that. And yet at the same time, if you can say, look, this is what happened, here's how it was resolved, and at the end of the day, I know who I am, I know whose I am, I know what is important. I know that there are eternal truths that are all around me, principles that are going to save me. I'm surrounded by people who love me and understand me. And the rest of it I can cope with. As a writer, if we can get that message out to the world, no matter how we do it, in fiction, in narrative nonfiction, in humor, online, in you know, paper and ink, to an audience, in a conference, on a talk show, if we can get that message out there, then I think that that's the work that the Lord would have us do.
Oh, I agree.
And I just had another thought on that honesty thing is, be careful about saying stuff on the internet or in whatever media you're using that you wouldn't say face to face to somebody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like sometimes it feels like you're sort of talking from behind this, you're wearing a mask or something. And so you feel more open about saying stuff that you might not have felt comfortable saying to someone's face. But that's not really a good thing. Like, and I think that affects that honesty thing. You're not really being yourself. You're not being who you would normally be in real life if you're not being true to that principle.
Well, you know, and I think
whether you're a troll looking for an argument that you, you know, and in
yeah.
real life you're a nice guy. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Or
whatever that is, like it would prevent a disconnect on the honesty thing if you would think, would I say this to someone's face? You
know? Well, the natural man doesn't get the last vote. The natural man doesn't get to decide what actually comes out of your mouth or what actually goes online. You may really have that impulse. Ooh, grr, you've said this thing and it's made me very angry. You know what? That may very well be the time when you just shut the computer off and walk away, you know.
Yeah, never read an email in anger. That's a whole other discussion.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I think that the technology, while it's been fantastic, it has taken out one boundary, and that is mm-hmm. what you just talked about. We forget that there's people
on the other side,
mm-hmm. of the screen reading what it is that you've emailed or Facebooked or tweeted or mm-hmm. blogged or mm-hmm. even just written. If you're not honest and careful in choosing your words, mm-hmm. there's people on the other side. And I think that's the one thing that I hope people can understand is to choose your words carefully. And remember, somebody is reading this. Mm-hmm. And would you say that to your mom or face-to-face to them? And if you wouldn't, then maybe you need to pick some different words.
Or think of a person at work who's a non-member friend, you know, who's not a member of our church but is a friend of yours. And is this how you would want to portray the church and yourself to that guy? You know what I mean? Sometimes it's easy to picture it not as a real person, but if you kind of anchor it to a real person, you're like, oh, okay, I would come across weird if I said that to my boss or my friend.
Right.
You know.
Well, and the good news is there are lots and lots and lots of words.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't have to choose the first 20 that come to mind. You really can go to another place and find another way of saying the same, you know, expressing the same truth.
Mm-hmm.
That is kinder. You know, what is it? True, kind, and necessary,
right?
Is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? And you're right. The internet has become a place where there is so much heartache. And now we have bullying, cyberbullying. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's that side of the equation. And yet, can I say some of the finest people I've ever met and known and developed a relationship with are people I met through the internet. I mean, you and I wouldn't know each other at all if we didn't blog together. This collection that we're working on right now, this Tell Me Who I Am, I've met every single one of those writers through the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are plenty of people that can uplift mm-hmm. and edify and build you up.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the sources you want to go to. They're the people that you want to spend your virtual time with. And they have the right words.
Right.
And they help give you the right words. Stay away from the ones who don't. They don't edify. They don't help. They don't make it easier for you to be a Latter-day Saint and to, you know, to carry out your responsibilities,
mm-hmm.
you know, online. It's, there's, we don't have the time for it.
Well, and this topic of choosing your words and so that you can come across as an authentic person, but and not crazy, is something we could talk about for forever, I think, because there's so much that we could learn from each other in ways to proclaim the gospel and be doing it in an authentic way. And I think we'll have to have another episode because we could just keep going forever. But thank you so much for coming today and being on our show, Brandon and Danae.
Sure.
And thank you for tuning in and listening to Tech Savvy. I'm Elisa Sharton, and this has been Tech Savvy on the Mormon Channel, a production of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. If you go to mormonchannel.org, under the tab Tech Savvy, you can download this and many other episodes. We'll see you next time.